We are having our third class, and tonight, Tazachem, we will conclude the topic of compliments and move on to criticism. We're having a series now of about eight classes which summarize a few very, very important concepts of marriage. Before we continue, I want to mention a few things.
Why are we talking about marriage? Why don't we start talking about the starting to date thing, like how you approach the girl, what do you do on like that? Why are you doing with her?
We had classes on that, David. We had a few series on that. We're not holding there. In a few months, we'll do that again. We did that.
Was I in this class?
Again?
I don't know.
Through the beginning, once again.
Twice.
We'll worry about it when we get there, okay? So, I just want to mention, we added a few new things to the site, and also... if people want, we have clothing, children's clothing. 1-year-old, 2-year-old. If any of our listeners need clothing for children, you guys know that I collect donations of money and clothing and jobs and services. People who need jobs from the Machon, they know we're working on it. And we also work on services. I mean, some of our listeners, if one's an accountant, so we ask them to give him an hour a week. If another listener is a lawyer, we ask him to give us an hour a week. So we ask for donations of money and services and jobs. If any of our listeners are hiring, so we have a lot of students looking for jobs. You should know, I also have, if people need clothing, if people need sweaters, coats, or something, let me know. And if there's anyone that needs children's clothing right now, I just got in... a bunch of children's clothing, and if anyone needs a table, I got in a table if no one comes to collect it. No. Now, we added to the website... Let's talk after class about it. I need to tell you something about that after class. I hope tonight to upload a series of classes, disc on the book Yoshev Ohel, a book that describes what one is supposed to do if one gets caught traveling and Shabbos sets in and he hasn't made it to his destination. A book that quickly covers a lot of the halachot. I hope to upload that tonight. I got authorization from the author of the book. It's a book on tape, more or less, but the author of the book, Rabbi Yort, gave me permission to put it on the website, so that's going to go up Bezrat Hashem tonight. And there was one more thing. I don't remember. So we'll start and maybe I'll remember. Okay. Sometimes, and often, there are points that cause people hindrance, cause people to hold themselves back from complimenting their spouse. And we discussed a few of them last week. One point that we didn't get to... people are scared they're going to exaggerate. If I'm going to tell her that she does an amazing job, she cleans the house and she brings up the kids and she dresses them, so I'm going to go too far, I'll exaggerate. And we discussed last week that our tendency is such that we always expect 10 times as much as we're given, and we always feel like we've given 10 times as much as the other side deserves. So if a person is going to take care not to exaggerate, then they should take care not to exaggerate beyond what the spouse thinks of themselves. And that would take many years. A person wouldn't get to that a long time. We have to do everything we do in an intelligent way. And complimenting is no exception. We have to think of how to compliment in ways that are not direct. Not only complimenting directly, as we've been discussing in the previous classes, but also there are actions and mannerisms which, in and of themselves, are forms of compliments. An example of that is saying the name of the spouse. If one leaves the home and says goodbye, that's nice. If one leaves the home and says, goodbye, Gnendel. So He said the person's name. That's a totally different level. One of the things we like hearing most is our name. Now again, every rule has its exception. There are cultures where the spouses do not refer to one another by their first name. Not, that's their own business. But assuming that the spouses do refer to one another by name, so it is good to get accustomed to say the spouse's name. Good morning, Gnendel. Good morning, Chaim. It sounds totally different than just good morning. Think about when you meet someone you haven't seen in 20 years and they suddenly remember your name. How excited we get. They remember my name. Because when they remember our name, that's an indication that we're important to them. By the same token, anyone that says our name gives us a feeling that we're important by them. The second point, which is obvious, is how we look at one another. A smile. Someone walks in, you greet him with a pleasant countenance. You're giving him strength and you're indicating to them that you're happy to see them. There's another point which I wouldn't even think to mention, only I've seen that people tend to miss it, and that is eye contact. I once, when I was a kid, heard a class on body language and decided to try it out on my teachers. So I heard in the class that if someone's talking to you and they lean and you lean forward to listen to what they have to say and you look them straight in the eye, so then you're giving them the indication that you're interested in hearing what they have to say. If you smile and nod your head ever so slightly as they're talking, you give them the feeling that you're really with them. So I decided to try it out on my teachers. And suddenly I saw that they shone. Wow! It was amazing to see. Then we had a substitute who was really not nice. So I decided I'm going to try the other way. So I did everything like a good student. I just gave him the exact opposite of what body language would be. So I didn't make eye contact. And at some point, so he called on me. So he felt it. Now, these are subtle ways in which we convey messages to one another. If we're upset at someone, or if we're even not whole with ourselves, so you'll notice that people will talk with their hands, and they'll move their hands fidgetily, and they won't look at you. They'll be looking down, and suddenly you feel uncomfortable talking to that person. You ever talk to someone who talks to you this way, looking down, not looking at you? And you start feeling uncomfortable because you need the eye contact. Well, when you get the eye contact, you're getting satiation. So much so that some Yemenites have a tradition that you don't make eye contact with a non-Jew. That's what they say. So when you make eye contact with a person, you're giving them satiation. You're giving them part of yourself. Don't give that. I once was talking to an Arab worker in the yeshiva, and one of the Yemenite guys in the yeshiva, a friend of mine, walked by, and he hissed at me. After I asked him, "What do you want?" He said, "You're talking to him, looking him straight in the eye. What are you doing?" So I didn't know what he was talking about, but he told me. So within a marriage, that's very important. All too often, as life catches up with us, we spend our time trying to catch up with life. And we're rushing and rushing, and we could be doing 10 things while we're communicating. And it's important to take the time to sit and talk to one another, looking one another in the eyes. Even if it means going out on a date, going to a hotel lobby and just buying a drink and sitting down and talking. It's very important. Chazal taught us, Hevem kabel kol adam besevel panim yafot. And by the way, going back to the previous point, this is something that if we're cognizant of it, then we can try to seek out ways of doing it more. If we know that it's important to make eye contact, it's important to lean forward when our spouse talks, it's important to give positive feedback, then we can find ways of doing it. If it falls by the wayside, so then we'll talk while I'm fixing the light bulb and she's making supper and then she's putting things in the oven and hanging out the laundry and I'm looking at my safer. How many couples sit for breakfast and the husband is here? He's reading his newspaper and she's talking. Yes, dear. Let's assume he's listening to her. Let's assume he's with her. He's half listening to her. But just the fact that there isn't eye contact is already giving a very big message. And when we have contact, so then we're giving a much more powerful, positive message. Shammai told us, Hevei mekabel et kol adam besevel panim yafot. we all know the stories of the people who came to Shammai, and how Shammai answered with the letter of the law. Shammai went with the philosophy, Yikov Hadin et Ahar. This is the letter of the law. We go with justice. And yet we have a surprise. When we open Pirkei Avot, Shammai was accustomed to saying, Hevim kabelt kol adam b'sever panim yifot. Always greet someone with a pleasant countenance. If someone's coming to you, Hevim mekabel, accept. When someone's coming to you, so always accept them with a pleasant countenance. And the question is asked, how come Shammai, who's always dealing with the din, what's so obligatory about this? I can understand that it goes beyond the call of duty. But to say that that's the call of duty, why is this the call of duty? So if I'm not mistaken, it's the Maharal. And I mentioned in the very beginning, and I'm mentioning again, most of what we're saying here is an English summary of classes that were given in Hebrew by Rav Simcha Cohen, and I put them on the website, the one who composed Abayit Ayudi. So he quotes there, he raises this question, and he quotes from, if I'm not mistaken, the Maharal, that says that, imagine you're standing, and someone comes to you, and they're all smiles, and they're warm, and your face is frozen. No expression. The person feels disgraced. When we give of ourselves, when we come towards someone, and our countenance, and our feelings are positive, and we get no response, so we're hurt. So Shammai is teaching us that it's not a question of being extra kind. It's a question of the letter of the law is such that when we accept someone, when someone's coming toward us, our countenance has to be positive. We have to give positive feedback. The other person's coming towards us, he's expecting that, and when he doesn't receive it, we're hurting him. Well, the letter of the law is that we're not allowed to hurt someone. And this isn't only when we're at the door. Sometimes, and you'll be surprised, but in the best of homes, a husband can walk through the door, and the wife will greet him with, oh, great, now there's someone to deal with the kids. That's what I came home for. That's not a correct way of greeting. I'm saying this because we have female listeners. And both parties have to work on this, to constantly be looking for ways to give positive expressions, positive compliments, and this is what helps the relationship thrive. Now, when we compliment, we should try to compliment with wisdom. Rav Simcha Cohen recounts that he once visited a rabbi in Bnei Brak, and when he came, the rabbi was sitting for a meal. It was the middle of the week, so he waited in a different room. And as he's waiting, the rabbi starts singing Shabbos Zmiros. So he thought, maybe in the middle of the week, when he eats, he sings Shabbos Zmiros. But he heard his wife come from the other room and ask, is everything okay? So he said, yes. But the food was so delicious, I felt it was like Shabbos. She'll remember that compliment. We have to try and think of ways of saying compliments in ways that they're memorable. It's not enough just to say every day, the food was great, thank you very much. We have to be wise and think of ways of complimenting wisely. We discussed a few weeks ago that the tendency of spouses is to think of the negative attributes of the children as coming from the other side. We said that some even explain that when Rivka, Rebecca, was telling Yaakov, Alai ki lilascha bini, your curses are upon me, when Yaakov was going in to deceive his father Yitzchak, we mentioned that there's an understanding that says, Rivka said, don't worry, if he catches on that you've been deceiving him, he'll say it's all from my side of the family. But let's think how we can reverse that. If a husband comes home and the wife tells him, you know, Shmulik is just like you. So the husband might react initially, what did he do wrong? But if the wife tells him, you know, he loves to help. He really takes after you. So now the next time there's an opportunity to help, the husband's going to be far more inclined to do it, because if not, then it's not from his side of the family that the kid has this positive attribute. We have to think of... So let me tell you what that is. But when I started dating my wife, so I sensed pretty early on that this was going to be serious. So I took advantage and I went to different families' homes. And every family I was in, I'd ask them for tips for married life. And I once visited by a special family. I mean, he was a genius, she was a genius. This was a family that their Shabbos table, they'd sit down for the meal, and the wife would tell her husband, okay, test me. And then he'd ask her riddles, questions on Rashi, on the Parsha, and she'd have to figure out the riddles. This was a man who used to give a lecture in higher mathematics here at the university. At the same time that he was learning in yeshiva, he would learn Gemara at such a fast pace that no one could learn him Chavrusa, because he would read just so quickly, no one could keep up with him. He was a genius.
Professor Allman?
No.
The guy that got the Nobel Prize recently?
No. So I'm sitting at the Shabbos table, and I asked them, could you tell me, what tips would you tell a newly married couple? And it was interesting to hear what he had to say, which was very little, and to hear what she had to say, which was a lot. So one of the things she told me was, she said, in the beginning, she said a few things, but the other things don't match this class, so we'll skip them for now. She said, when a couple gets married, you suddenly encounter that we're different. And not only are we different, but each side thinks the other side should change. And sometimes, both sides are in agreement that one side has to change. Sometimes there's disagreement, right? One husband says, I don't do dishes. And the wife says, yeah, but I'm drowning in work. What do you mean you don't do dishes? My father always did dishes. So here you have two different attitudes. And the question is, how do you find the median, the meeting ground between them? So she said, the smartest way that a spouse can help a spouse change and maintain positive feelings is by strengthening the positive. Instead of reacting when things don't go the way they should, just complimenting and giving extra positive feedback when things go the way they should. Then the person intrinsically and naturally and without even feeling it starts trying to adopt that behavior, because we all thrive on compliments, on feeling that we're good. So this is just another example of that. And it's not only another example of that, but it's a smart way of giving the compliment. It's a way that the other side's going to feel good about it. All too often our compliments are very weak. They leave the other side thinking, what does he want from me? Why is he buttering me up? All too often we don't even treat the compliments as real. We don't feel like they're true, and with good reason. We're accustomed to compliments not being true, as we discussed last week. Usually we compliment because we want to gain something.
I know it's not a good thing to compliment on something that we know is half true.
Why should it be half true?
Well, if you compliment on something that's not really true, I mean, like, oh, you're a great cook, but she's not really a great cook.
So then a person shouldn't outright lie.
It's one thing to be like Shalom Abayas, you're allowed to twist the truth. Okay, it's one thing, but I mean to actually, you know, to over compliment is not.
I think that there are ways of complimenting truthfully. Let me tell you a story. I have to check if I'm allowed to tell you who the parties are. But I think I am. In the past I did, but for now I want to check it out first. Couple gets married. True story. I know all the parties involved. And the morning after the wedding, the wife asks the husband, what would you like to eat? And the husband says, well, why not a hard-boiled egg? So the wife says, okay. She takes out a pot, takes out an egg, puts it in the pot, puts it on the fire. The husband's sitting there and he looks and he says, what are you doing? So she says, he said, you want a hard-boiled egg? And he says, yeah, and what are you doing? She said, I'm making a hard-boiled egg. So So he said, no, you have to put water in the pot. You can't make a hard-boiled egg without water. She grew up in a home where her mother would never let her into the kitchen. Her mother said, you're going to spend your whole married life in the kitchen. As a child, you're not entering the kitchen. So the morning after marriage, she didn't know you needed water in a pot to make a hard-boiled egg. Today she's an amazing cook, and she tells this story. That's why I think it's permitted to say it, because she tells it. She's such an amazing cook that when young kallahs come, she tells over the story to encourage them, to tell them, look, when I start out, I didn't even know how to make an egg. And today she's a really amazing cook. People take recipes from her.
I can make a sandwich.
So I don't think she would have gotten there if her husband would have kept knocking her cooking. But if her husband, I wasn't there, but I assume that he helped her out and said, look, this is how you do it, and why don't you try this? And he got her a good cookbook. And with every little improvement, he said, oh, this is much better than last week. You know, this is amazing. Here we got it right. Maybe we should try it with this. Maybe with that. There are ways of being positive even when things aren't the best in the world. Imagine you want to help your wife out. So you go ahead and do the laundry. So you get the detergent, and you figure out which knob goes this way and which knob goes that way. And you've never done this before. And there's an Israeli machine. So you put in the socks, you put in the pants, you put in everything, and you leave the laundry to go. Now, you really had an important project to work on, but you know she's tired. So you decide you're gonna do this for her. You finish the laundry, and you didn't realize that there were a few blue socks in the laundry, and all the laundry comes out blue. True story. Now, what? if your wife said to you, you know, Michael, I know the laundry came out blue, but I also know that you took the time and you did it out of care, and you really, I really appreciate that you took time. You didn't have time for this. You did it because you wanted me to have less work. Let's go over what you shouldn't do in laundry, but I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Would you feel it was a lie? Or would you say, that's the reaction I expected? But if your wife said, Michael, you dunce, what are you doing the laundry for? You know I do laundry. You know you never touch the laundry. You messed up all the laundry. Now I'm going to have to walk around with a blue mitpachat instead of white mitpachat. What am I going to wear on my Shabbos? All my clothing are blue. You wouldn't say, well, that's the truth. I am a dunce. I shouldn't have done it, right? Okay. There are a few points we have to remember when it comes to praise. Sometimes you'll ask a person, does your spouse appreciate you? Does your spouse compliment you? And you'll hear the answer, I hear that he does. It's forbidden to praise a spouse in front of others. Wow. To start telling other people, my wife makes the best sandwich. My wife keeps the home the cleanest. My wife is the best mother for kids. Whenever we praise a spouse in front of others, what we're causing is we're causing them to feel that their spouse is lacking. One of the issues that every husband and wife has to contend with, unfortunately, today, is the fact that they're going to hear from other husbands and wives, and this is more a problem that women have to contend with, about what their spouse is doing. So a woman is at home, and she talks to her friend number one, and friend number one says, yeah, my husband's amazing. He cleans the whole house for Shabbos. And she hangs up the phone and thinks, my husband doesn't clean for Shabbos. And she starts thinking, maybe I have to talk to him when he comes home. She calls Mrs. B, and Mrs. B says, yeah, my husband's amazing. He does all of the cooking for Shabbos. And she hangs up the phone and she thinks, my husband doesn't cook for Shabbos. I think I really have to talk to him when he comes home. She talks to Mrs. C, and she says, you know, my husband's so amazing. He takes the kids out so I could do the cooking and cleaning for Shabbos. And she thinks, my husband doesn't take the kids so I could cook and clean for Shabbos. So now when he comes home, she's thinking, You should be taking the cake so I could cook and clean. You should be cooking. You should be cleaning. There's a whole list, because she's hearing from each person what their husband does. She doesn't remember, well, maybe my husband works till 2 o'clock in the morning Thursday night. My husband is with the kids on Shabbos. My husband, there are a lot of things that maybe he's doing that someone else isn't doing. But, but when we talk to other people, so each time a new thing comes on the list. And it causes us to feel, hey, why isn't my husband doing this, or my wife? And that's why we, as those who are going to compliment, have to take care not to do it in front of others. We have friends that the wife once told my wife, she said, whenever I invite a couple and the cooking, I'm nervous, how's my cooking going to come out? So I always tell myself, if it comes out bad, it's also good. It'll help their shalom bias. They'll come home and the husband will say, honey, you cook much better than she. So I always say, whichever way I go, I'm not going bad. There's truth to that. Sometimes people think that if I praise my spouse, then their nose will be in the clouds. We have to know that our sages taught us that when we give our spouse the praise, then they'll honor us more. It's not the other way around. It's not that they'll start thinking, I'm so great and you, haha. No, quite the contrary. When a spouse gives, so then the natural reaction with time is that the receiver appreciates the giver more and more. Now here's a point which is for the women in our audience, but it's also slightly relevant to the men. There's a common phenomenon that a man will say, the food was great. And the wife's going to answer, you're just hungry. He's going to say, you know, I brought you this beautiful, expensive robe. And she'll look at it and she'll say, it's gorgeous. Did they give it out free at work? He's going to bring home flowers and she'll say, the vendor wouldn't let you pass without buying one, right? It's a mistake. What the woman is really doing is she's pushing off the compliment because she wants another one. You said the food was great. She says, no, you were just hungry. She wants you to say, no, what do you mean I was just hungry? It has nothing to do with my hunger. This was amazing. The blend of spices, you cooked it, it was just right. It was soft. She wants you to argue with her. She wants you to say, no, give it out free. You're so precious. I'm happy I spent the money on it. She wants to hear more. Now, if we know this, then we'll know how to react to it. But at the same time, to our female audience, it's not the right way to go. We have to get accustomed to showing appreciation for a compliment. And even though I'm saying this is directed more to the females, this is also common with males. Very often when we receive a compliment, we don't know what to do with ourselves. So the only way we know how to accept a compliment and we feel like it's being modest is by knocking either the compliment or the one who gave it. Very often we feel like, how can I accept the compliment? If someone tells me, you look good, men especially, if someone tells you look good, so what do I do with that? If someone tells you, I really enjoy your Dvar Torah, so what do people very often do? They're uncomfortable with the compliments. Well, they say, yeah, but I forgot this, I left this out. They'll either knock themselves, or even worse, sometimes they'll knock the one who's giving the compliment or the compliment. And this stems from the fact that we don't know what to do with the compliment. So we have to get accustomed to reacting positively, to saying thank you, I appreciate it. It was so good to hear that. I really appreciate that you expressed that. And that will encourage the other person to give it more. I want to end this topic with a point we discussed last week and another point. When we look at everything we've discussed, sometimes it feels like this is small. This is little. This is for small people. I should be above all of this. This is what's important to me. We're going to read in our parsha about how Reuven was present when the brothers were discussing murdering Yosef. And Reuven said, let's not spill his blood, let's throw him into the pit. And the Torah says Reuven's plan was to come back at night and bring him back home to dad. He was just waiting for the moment when they weren't looking. That's why I said, put him in the pit. And he figured, in the pit, I'll be able to make it. I'll get him when they're not looking. I'll take him back. And when he wasn't looking, they sold him down to Egypt. Our sages say that Reuven did a great act of courage here. And yet, Chazal say it could have been better. When Moshe is being invited by God to take the position of leadership, to take the Jewish people out of Egypt, he refuses, until finally God tells him, Aaron, your brother, you're worried that until now he was the leader, he was the prophet in Egypt. He's not jealous. He's already, I sent him out to greet you. And when he sees you, he's going to be happy in his heart. And Chazal say that that's indicative of the pure heart that Aaron had, that because he was so happy, God gave him the breastplate, the choshen, because he had a pure heart. So he had the plate on his heart that was a defendant on behalf of the Jewish people, this breastplate. And yet, Chazal say, both about Reuven and about Aaron, if they would have known that the Torah is recording their actions, that the Torah is saying about how Reuven saved Yosef, the Medrash says Reuven would have taken him on his shoulders and taken him all the way back home to his father. If Aaron would have known how the Torah is recording his heart, that he's going to be happy at seeing Moshe, Aaron would have gotten a whole band together to go out and greet Moshe. That's what the Medrash says. He would have gone out betufim uvim cholot, with a band, with music. Meaning, even great people like Reuven, like Aaron, if they would know, if they would have appreciation, they would perform better. Everyone performs better with appreciation. This isn't small. This is what we all thirst for. When Avram is visited by angels, so they ask him, where is Sarah, your wife? Ayei Sarah Ishtecha. And Avram says, Hinei Baal, she's in the tent. So Rashi automatically comments, the angels came and they asked this question. They knew where Sarah was, but they wanted to show Avram, you know, this isn't ordinary that she's in the tent. She's extraordinarily modest. And when Avram will take note of that, he will be more fond of Sarah. Now let's think about it. This couple has been together for the better part of a century. They're two old, an old man and an old woman. They've spent most of their lives together, if not all of their lives together, and they have a budding relationship. And yet, there was room to be more positive. When Sarah is thinking in her thoughts, she doesn't even say a word. She says, how could it be that we're going to have a child? For my master is old. Notice, she calls Avram my master. Vadoni zaken, my master is old. She views Avram with the highest regard. And yet God is careful to change her words. When God quotes it to Avram, God says, Lama zet zachaka Sarah le'mor, ha'af umnam eled? Why is it that Sarah laughed, saying the following, is it true that I will bear a child? Va'ani zakanti, but I am old, I am aged? God changes that word. Because even by people like Avram and Sarah, even by people who are so great, there are levels and they could move forward and they could progress. And God changes the quote so that there will be greater love, because greater love means greater Shechina. And one of the main things that can bring two people closer together, that can make there be greater love, is to give compliments, to show appreciation.